Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, a grain market analyst says weather is a key factor in grain markets this month. We'll hear from Neil Townsend with FarmLink Marketing Solutions. Cynthia Beck is a master's student in clinical psychology at the University of Regina. She's currently leading a two-month well-being course that has been tailored for agriculture. We'll hear from her on today's program. The executive director of the Swine Health Information Center says bilateral trade agreements that outline how nations will react in the event of African swine fever can help minimize the negative impacts of an outbreak. Dr. Paul Sundberg will join us on the show. And last Monday, we had a winner on the GX94 Canola Cash Contest. We'll speak with the winner, Elmer Litzenberger of Melville. All that and much more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, today we have some cloud and some smoke, and I guess that's combining to keep our temperatures a little lower?
Yeah, the heat warning is not in effect now. The temperature is only making it at the mid-20s today. The smoke is working against the temperature warming. The filtering of the sunshine certainly holds us down a few degrees. We're also on the north side of our frontal boundary. This front has just sagged southward a bit. It's producing some very heavy showers right along the Manitoba-North Dakota line and then across into Minnesota and westernmost Ontario. Some very heavy showers from that front there. Staying east of us, though, as the low-pressure area along this front will slide by through the afternoon. It will likely lift the front back northward a bit as it passes, and that brings in the chance for a couple of showers and thunderstorms. Now, two things from this front. One is the threat for showers, and one is its exact track is really not going to bring us back into that warm air until Wednesday. So tomorrow, we'll be in and out of cloud cover. We'll be dealing with a couple of scattered showers and thunderstorms. Watching what's happening to the east versus what's happening to the west, there isn't much activity relative to those heavy showers with the way that's moving through here. There will likely be a few heavier showers, but mostly it's going to be lighter showers that flare up with this system. Measurable. There will be some measurable precipitation, and because of the threat lingering through tonight, through tomorrow, and at least through tomorrow evening as this sort of meanders, there will be decent amounts of measurable precipitation, on average 5 to 10 millimeters, a few areas where it gets a little bit higher. And then things dry out, the front goes by, the whole system lifts back north, we get back into that warm air, and temperatures recover into the 30s. Now, because there's still the smoke around, that will still be in the air, it's questionable just how warm we'll get. I think 30s are certainly a potential, but some of us will get held down into the upper 20s because of the smoke. Through the day today, 24. A bit of a breeze, 15 to 25. Tonight, scattered showers and storms developing. We're down to 14. Tomorrow, those continue. Again, the best chance for those showers in the afternoon. Tomorrow, high 25. And we dry out later Tuesday night with a low of 16. Wednesday, partly to mostly sunny, 32. Again, with that caveat that areas of smoke coming in will obscure the obscure the sky and obscure the sun and hold the temperature down a bit. Thursday doesn't look to have that limitation. Mostly sunny, high of 35, and then back into the low 30s on Friday, as we've been noting. interesting, though, this pattern is not really breaking. This is just a little interruption in it. We're still in this very warm pattern. Once we get past this interruption, we're likely in it through the balance of July, and with temperatures running well above normal.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw and Roblin are at 17 degrees, Swan River 16, Dauphin, Brandon, and Shoal Lake Russell 18. Regina and Indian Head are at 19 degrees, Saskatoon and Hudson Bay 15, Broadview Mooseman 21, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington 16. The Yorkton-Melville region has haze, an east wind at 21 kilometers an hour. 71% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 20 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of 30 degrees and dropped to a low of 14 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is 24 degrees. The normal low is 12 degrees. The sun rose in Yorkton at 4:57 this morning, and it will set at 8:55 tonight. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hot spot was Fisher Branch at 34 degrees. The cold spot, Kelsey Dam, at 5 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was the Canadian hotspot. Coronach in south-central Saskatchewan got up to 36 degrees. The cold spot was Stony Rapids at 6 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. A grain market analyst says weather is a key factor in grain markets this month. Neil Townsend with FarmLink Marketing Solutions says wheat could rise another $1 a bushel or more, and canola could jump to $1,000 a metric ton from the current $915 a ton on the futures.
It's pretty electric in Canada for sure. Unfortunately, due to, you know, prolonged and quite devastating drought-like conditions over, you know, big parts of the Western Canadian prairie. So, you know, we've seen crops that are being produced in Western Canada and also the Northern Plains like North Dakota and Montana. Those crops have had a lot of upside to them because production prospects are really deteriorating. So that would include like canola, spring wheat, some of the pulses, you know, barley, oats, you know, some of the special crops as well.
Can you say how much upside there is at this stage?
Well, I mean, I think there's more. As always, we have to be concerned about, you know, elasticity or, you know, the amount that people can substitute for other things. I mean, I think with canola, there's, you know, a lot of canola is produced in such a manner, especially the oil, where, you know, the reason why people are using it is because it is canola and they're making front of the box health claims about it. So people, you know, want, you know, if you're producing something and you have a advertisement on the front of your box that has canola oil in it, well, it better have canola oil in it, right? We're going to test those theories because, I mean, you know, the crop is just getting smaller and smaller, it seems. The 7 to 10 day forecast here is quite negative for a lot of the regions of Western Canada and also North Dakota and Montana. And the news story today, which is also sort of popping the broader market, is just that now hot and destabilizing weather is moving into the Corn Belt. And people are worried that, you know, the corn might be hurt. Now, the corn is not going to be a disaster in any way, shape, or form. It's going to struggle in places like North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Northwest Iowa. But it's a matter of relativity. And, I mean, it just cannot afford to go from, like, say, a 179.5 bushel per acre, which is the current USDA yield. But if it goes to 175 or 174, so we're talking like a 2 or 3% decline, that would be incredibly bullish. And that's sort of where the numbers are coalescing right now, given the weather forecast and everything. I've got to caution a little bit, like weather can turn around and weather can build some yield back, in particular in the Corn Belt. But in Western Canada and North Dakota and Montana and parts of Minnesota, I mean, the game is unfortunately much, much closer to being over than it is to having a pathway to build yield at this point.
So what's your outlook for canola prices?
Well, canola, I mean, I think we're going to see, I think there's a pathway to $1,000 plus futures. You know, we're at about 915, 920 right now as of Friday when we're taping this. But definitely I think that, you know, the weather forecast that we have for the next 7 to 10 days in critical areas, including Regina, southern Saskatchewan, southern Alberta, basically most of Manitoba up to Saskatoon is very negative. It's not something that's going to repair or build yield. So I think we're going to see November 2021 futures trade above $1,000. Now, at some point, you know, demand is going to have a say, and to the degree which demand can be, you know, cut. Right now, I would say supply is being cut at a much, much, much faster rate than demand is fading away.
And where is wheat headed?
Well, I think we're going to see $10 futures. People will try to deny this. People will try say it's not going to happen. But, you know, it's a devastated crop in North Dakota and Montana. The USDA acknowledged that on their July 12th report, really slashing the yields there. And I think those yield slashes are going to start to happen in Canada more precipitously. And we're going to see a much smaller, tighter crop. Now, remember, farmers planted less spring wheat to begin with, both in Canada and in the Northern Plains, the U.S., and, you know, the quality of the hard red winter wheat crop wasn't great. So people will be looking for spring wheat to blend that up for making products that they make in the U.S. And, you know, we're going to ship a lot more spring wheat down to the U.S. because they have a much smaller crop and their demand is not going anywhere. So I'm very optimistic that we're going to see a wheat go up by 10, 12, 15% and even more. I mean, we could really test some sort of historical numbers here. Of course, the rest of the world matters, and the rest of the world doesn't quite have the same level of desperation right now. Australia is on track for quite a good crop. The EU has a bounce back crop. Of course, we have to watch carefully. There's been, we're talking about drought in North America, and we're talking about like historic floods in Germany. And Germany is one of the parts of the European Union where they really rely on having a slightly better quality wheat crop that gives them some protein, right? And again, you know, rain at harvest and this kind of stuff is usually not very good.
What's your outlook for pulse crops?
I think peas have definitely been detrimented quite significantly by the weather. So the pea production in Canada is probably at risk right now. Peas have really one offshore market when we talk about yellow peas, that's China. We think China's still going to be in the game buying that. There's a lot of verbiage and posturing coming out of China about, oh, you know, they're not going to need to buy as much. There's absolutely no tangible on-the-street proof of that. So, you know, to make a speculation in the middle of July about what their next 12 months of demand is going to look like in China. And again, they're one of those countries where they put out a lot of official numbers, but those official numbers maybe have a discrepancy between the real numbers. So I still think yellow peas are going to be demanded by China, maybe not quite to the level that they were last year, but they can't be because Canada simply won't have the supply. So we think pea prices are firming and we think they're going to get higher yet. For lentils are sort of a desert dryland crop. They are holding up a little bit better than most of the other crops in terms of our observations. That being said, the next 5 to 7 to 10 days, if it is as hot as they say it is and as dry as they say it's going to be, even lentils are going to start to fade back and, you know, take that top off the yield. The good thing about lentils is that worldwide, every major lentil producer is scheduled to produce a smaller crop year on year, and their trade volumes are expected to be as big, if not bigger, than they were last year. So with Canada with a smaller supply, we're going to see, you know, continued firming of that market. I should add, for pulses and smaller crops, one thing that has been very challenging has been an extreme shortage of capacity in terms of containers, and there doesn't seem to be an immediate resolution of that. On the plus side will be, like, we're just going to have this is trying to find something positive in a really negative outlook for Western Canada in terms of production, but there's going to be a lot of extra capacity in Western Canada in 21-22. Meaning that lentils maybe don't have to always go in a container. They can go in a bulk vessel or be bulk transported out to the west or east coast and then ship that way. And so, you know, we can maybe get around some of the hurdles of that. Final thought, though, on pulses and the grains and all of them is another challenge for Canada is that, like, ocean freight is rising in price. So, you know, we're going to have higher priced products, but also higher priced ocean freight. So the consumer at the end of the pipeline, you know, that's where he might balk and say, oh, you know what, this is too expensive for me.
So how much will pulses go up?
I would say like at least 10%, maybe more. You know, it's hard to say with the pulse market because there's so much politics involved and there's so much sort of, you know, Indian government policy and restrictions and fading restrictions and all those kinds of things. But, you know, all of the groundwork has been laid for higher prices, and 10% might be just the beginning. I mean, it might go as high as 15 to 20% higher than it is right now. But again, a lot of it depends on how resilient demand is. If demand just doesn't have the finances or the money to afford this, it's going to be, that will soften what the price gets to. But there's upside. That's the main takeaway.
Neil Townsend is the senior market analyst with FarmLink Marketing Solutions. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX94, Ag Review.
Winnipeg grain firm Parrish and Heimbecker plans to boost throughput at one of its eastern Saskatchewan elevators with upgrades to its rail car loading systems. Privately held P&H says it plans to expand to a 100-car spot, up from 50, at its elevator at Quill Lake. Work on that expansion, connecting to Canadian National Railway's Margo subdivision at its site east of town, is expected to start this month, for completion in November. Also, work will begin in August on a new rail car unloading system at the elevator, which will allow them to unload a rail car off either track at 272 metric tons per hour. That new system, due for completion in September, would also allow the elevator to unload an improperly loaded car or to receive cars loaded elsewhere. P&H's grain handling capacity at Quill Lake was expanded in 2000 from 3,500 metric tons to 9,000 and again to 21,000 metric tons in 2011 with the addition of seven new steel bins. Separately, work is already underway on a fertilizer rail unload tunnel able to empty a rail car at 20 metric tons per hour, along with what is described as the first phase of increasing the speed of the facility's rail loadout capacity. The company has expanded the Quill Lake site's fertilizer retail business in recent years, having installed a new shed there in 2016. A report from a federal provincial working group says the retail sector has levied an increasing number of fees on suppliers and is proposing the formation of a code of conduct as a potential solution. Canada's agriculture ministers are now calling on industry to lead the process. They had formed the working group to study the issue in November, following complaints from suppliers that retailers were increasingly charging arbitrary and costly fees. A summary report released Thursday says those fees are causing tensions in supply chain relationships, particularly between processors and retailers, as fees have increased in their form and scale, and they have changed in the manner in which they are imposed. To find a regulated or legislated approach, the working group says provincial action would likely be required, but stakeholders operating on a national level contend doing so could lead to disjointed provincial action, which could lead to inconsistent applications and loopholes if some provinces chose not to take action or do so differently. One potential approach being pitched is the development of a voluntary code of conduct with detailed rules to guide commercial relationships while also providing a dispute resolution process. The Alberta government will be engaging with farmers, processors, and consumers this summer on new local food labels. The new labels will read "Made in Alberta by Albertans" for farmers and processors to use on their products. These labels will help consumers identify locally produced food while shopping. The summer consultations will include the label design and rules for using the label on different food products. The food and beverage processing sector is one of the largest employers in Alberta. It employs about 28,000 workers and recorded food manufacturing sales of $15.5 billion in 2020. The American Meat Science Association, or AMSA, has announced Dr. Phyllis Shand as the 2021 Industry and Organizational Leadership Award recipient. Shand is a professor of meat and food science in the Department of Food and Bioproduct Sciences at the University of Saskatchewan, whose research program focuses on physicochemical, biochemical, and functional aspects of muscle protein. Shand is an internationally known and respected meat scientist with a range of specialties, including fresh meat quality, to further processing and novel ingredients. Shand will be honored during the 74th AMSA Reciprocal Meat Conference Awards presentation on August 17th in Reno, Nevada. And that's today's AgriView portion. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return in 60 seconds time.
Taylor.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. We have haze and 20 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Cynthia Beck is a master's student in clinical psychology at the University of Regina. She's currently leading a two-month well-being course that has been tailored for agriculture. It comes during a time when mental health is in the spotlight due to the economic and emotional stress caused by drought. Beck says the online course is staffed by a trained therapist to deal specifically with struggles faced by people in agriculture.
Sometimes when people are seeing a clinician, it might be really natural for the clinician to say, you know what, you need to set some boundaries. You also need to take some time off. Well, if you were telling me that in harvest, I would look at you and say, are you nuts? Like, get a grip. Because a farmer cannot leave their farm in high production season, which has all the impact on their income for the year, right? So it's really important when we are developing programs for farmers that we develop them so that they flow in accordance with what a farmer's reality is.
Beck can provide direction to therapists because she lives on a farm near Milestone in southeastern Saskatchewan.
Well, my family and I farm approximately an hour south of Regina. We run a mixed farming operation, so we have grain land, a purebred Charolais herd, and a commercial herd of cattle. And we're a multi-generational farm, so we have three active generations right now farming with us.
So all of your personal experiences are helping you develop this new program?
I think that it's really important for agriculture producers to receive services from a point of understanding of what their personal experience is. And that's part of the reason why it was so important to me that I conduct research for my thesis that incorporated the agricultural point of view. So the program basically is from a farmer for farmers, is how I would word it.
Beck says everyone has different ways of dealing with adversity. Some methods are good and others not so good.
Some people turn to speaking with a professional. Some people turn to speaking with friends and family. And those are fantastic ways of coping. Sometimes, though, people aren't sure what to do. So one kind of, it comes down to ease of access, right? So for some people, they turn to perhaps alcohol to cope. Or some people use avoidance strategies. And one way to be an avoider as a farmer is to work harder, right? And so sometimes our work ethic can also, it's really, really helpful and beneficial, but there's times where it can be harmful because we do have the ability to work ourselves into the ground, which does not help us with coping.
Beck notes that there's a free program offered through the University of Regina called OnlineTherapyUser.ca, but it's only for Saskatchewan residents. The online program has helped 10,000 clients since it was established in 2010.
People who apply to the program will answer questions that are very similar to what you would answer the very first time that you met with your doctor or a therapist. We make sure that the course or programs are a good fit for you. Individuals are provided with a confidential account within the online therapy unit courses, and people work through the courses at their own pace. And also with the well-being course for agriculture producers, there are dedicated therapists that are assigned to clients. So therapists are available to converse with clients by email or by telephone, and they check in with clients, they provide support, and they also make sure that they are still doing okay throughout the program.
Cynthia Beck is a master's student in clinical psychology at the University of Regina. She will also be one of the guest speakers at the Livestock and Forage Center of Excellence Field Day tomorrow near Clamett.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for August closed at 120.25 today. That's up 7. October live cattle closed at 125.10, down 50. August feeder cattle closed at 157.37, up 175. September feeder cattle closed at 159.05, up 55. August lean hogs closed at 104.47, down 117. October lean hogs closed at 89.37, down 137. And that's the livestock market conditions. And welcome back to GX on Agriculture. A new farm service is being offered by the past president of the Canadian Crop Hail Association. Rick Omelchenko of Saskatoon is providing information to farmers who want advice on hail and drought loss this summer. He has set up a business called Western Crop Risk Advisors.
What I've been doing is I'm helping farmers mitigate risk at the time of claim. So I'm actually assisting them with my 35 years plus years of experience. I'm helping them identify, mitigate, mediate just their crop claims at the time that they're having the adjusters out there from the companies, just making sure that they get the best possible assessment that they can get.
Have you assessed any hail claims yet this summer?
Yeah, I've done a couple already. There was an early storm passed through just north, more west of Saskatoon that had some early damage on early plants. We did a claim up, got it assessed, and both farmer and company were very happy, and the relationship stayed very concrete.
Now you're based in Saskatoon, but how far will you travel?
Yeah, right now I'm focusing on Saskatchewan, mainly like right from one end of the province to the other end, south and north. But I will travel into Alberta and Manitoba, fully a licensed adjuster. And just what I'm offering is just my experience so that the farmers feel comfortable and they can sleep well, that they're getting the best assessment possible.
How does someone contact you?
Yeah, they can give me a call, 306-441-0224, or they can go on my website, CropRiskAdvisors.com, and they can get a hold of me there.
How's business been so far?
It's steady. This year, because of the drought conditions and that, there hasn't been no very few hailstorms. But, you know, in conditions like this, crops, there could be some situations where they need help. There's a lot of crops out there that aren't looking that good, and every dollar counts.
Can you help producers who have drought issues?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the big things I can offer is my experience in these kind of conditions on, do you settle now, do you settle later, is there more going to happen to my crop, is that kind of a fair assessment, and this just gives them, my experience will give them that knowledge and that base that they can really assure themselves that they're getting the best value for their assessment.
And what do you charge?
Right now, I'm charging a per acre amount, $1.25 a claimed acre. But there was, earlier on, I was actually charging a retainer just to make sure that they get my business, because I have a feeling that when this gets going and hailstorms start, the guys that paid the retainer was a 25-cent retainer. I've got to go there first. But I'll do my best to get out to everybody I possibly can.
Rick Omelchenko is the owner of Saskatoon-based Western Crop Risk Advisors.
Commodities update.
Canola futures closed down across the board today. November canola closed at $8.98.10, down $19.40. January canola closed at $8.79.70, that's down $19.70. September Minneapolis wheat closed at $9.23.75, up 6.5 cents. September Kansas City wheat closed at $6.52.25, up 0.75 cents. September Chicago wheat closed at $6.97.75, up 5.25 cents. September corn closed at $5.56 per bushel, unchanged. August soybeans closed at $14.28 per bushel, down 26.75 cents. September oats closed at $4.31.75, down 4.25 cents. And that's the commodities update. The Western College of Veterinary Medicine is exploring the potential for subunit vaccines to protect pigs from brachyspira-associated diarrhea. Dr. John Harding, a professor with the Western College of Veterinary Medicine, says researchers have been working on this for about 10 years now. First, he tells us, what is brachyspira, what are the animal health implications, and why is it the focus of the work in developing vaccines?
Brachyspira is a genus of bacteria. There are a number of species within that genus that affect pigs, and some of those cause diarrhea. The common ones that we recognize of importance for the swine industry are Brachyspira hyodysenteriae, Hampsonii, and Pelosicola. And the significance for animal health is varying degrees of diarrhea, anything from a wet cement type looseness to a full-blown bloody diarrhea. And the focus of our swine dysentery research is to develop a vaccine that prevents the swine dysentery, which is the most severe form of diarrhea, typically associated with bloody and mucoid discharge.
What challenges have researchers come up against, and what's the significance of those obstacles?
It's been a really challenging venture to develop these vaccines. Swine dysentery was discovered in the early 1970s, and shortly after that, you know, various researchers around the world have attempted to produce vaccines of different types. Some of those vaccines are killed whole cell bacteria. Some of those are subunit vaccines where parts of the bacteria are expressed. And the real challenges are that the gut is a hard place to generate an immune response. And secondary to that, when it does, the immune response is fairly weak and really most specific to the individual strain of bacteria that's in the vaccine. So gaining heterologous protection has been a real challenge, but gaining any protection has had significant challenges over the years.
How difficult is brachyspira and why?
I think brachyspira is particularly challenging because, you know, in itself, the bacteria is very hard to work with. It doesn't grow well in culture, so that means it's difficult to grow large volumes of the bacteria to do an inoculation study. And I think more importantly is, even after, you know, 30 to 40 years of research, we really don't have a clear understanding of what the virulence factors of the bacteria are. So what that means is essentially, what does the bacteria have on its outer surface, or what does it excrete while in the intestine that induces disease? So one common example of that is, we don't really know how blood is lost into the intestinal tract in a brachyspira infection. One would expect that if you had a hemorrhagic diarrhea or bloody diarrhea, that the mucosal surfaces of the intestine would be, you know, very damaged, and there'd be just free blood leaking into the intestine, but that doesn't seem to happen. So basic mechanisms of disease are still really unknown, even though we've been studying this bacteria for many years.
How important is the diagnosis and differentiation between the species?
That's a very good question. There are six different species of Brachyspira that may infect the pig, but only three of them, potentially four, but three of them will certainly be well documented to cause disease. So first step in diagnosis is identifying if a Brachyspira is present, or maybe more specifically, if one of the pathogenic Brachyspiras are present in the gut. And we have a diagnostic service at WCVM, which uses various techniques, you know, whether that's culture or one of several different PCR tests that will answer those questions of whether there is a Brachyspira present, or more specifically, if a given species of Brachyspira are present. From a farmer's perspective, that is absolutely essential. If bloody diarrhea is seen on the farm, or even just if diarrhea is seen on the farm, and I'm specifically talking about the girl finish population here, the key to control is to understand which organism is there, whether it's a Brachyspira or whether it's a Lawsonia or an E. coli or many of the other organisms we deal with. So proper diagnosis is important. We certainly have the tools and techniques to do that today, and it doesn't necessarily mean sacrificing animals. We do most of our diagnostics, probably 80 to 90%, just on fecal samples. Important thing being, collect the correct fecal sample on the farm and get it to the lab as quickly as you can.
What steps have been taken in producing a vaccine?
We've been on this route for about 10 years now, and we started off studying specifically Brachyspira hamsonii because that is the most common Brachyspira causing diarrhea in Western Canada. We've since moved into Brachyspira hyodysenteriae, but we are hoping that whatever vaccine we develop will cross-protect against both of those two species, and that's a big challenge. Getting a vaccine to protect against the same species is going to be a challenge enough, but we've got big dreams here.
How do the vaccines work, and what advantages do they offer?
So the challenge with producing immunity in the intestine is the best way to do that is to actually vaccinate or provide the antigen, present it to the gut. So, you know, that would be by far the best way. But the challenge in doing that is that any protein that you put in the feed orally will potentially be digested, either break down in the stomach or break down by digestive enzymes in the small intestine. The challenge with Brachyspira is it is a disease of the large intestine, which is at the hind gut, is what we call it. It means any of those antigens need to travel through, you know, 10 to 15 meters of small intestine before you get to the colon. And there is no good technique now that would allow, you know, a protein to be encapsulated and bypass all of those digestive enzymes to get to the hindgut. Whoever in the world discovers that is going to be very rich and famous. But what we're left with is basically intramuscular vaccination.
Dr. John Harding is a professor with the Western College of Veterinary Medicine.
Hey.
Welcome back to GX and Agriculture. Last Monday, we had a winner on the GX94 Canola Cash Contest. Elmer Litzenberger of Melville won $2,665. He received his check this morning.
Oh, it's great. A person can always use some extra cash, let me tell you.
He knows how he will be spending some of the money.
Well, probably I'll have to buy my wife something nice. I didn't expect to win, and so I said, if I win, I'm going to buy her something nice, and lo and behold, I did win, so I guess now I have to buy her something nice.
And he's a faithful GX94 listener.
Oh, more or less all my life. I grew up as a kid listening to GX94, and I've always listened to it, you bet.
Elmer Litzenberger won $2,665 on the GX94 Canola Cash Contest last Monday. It's now 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 Precision Weather Forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Partly sunny, winds east-northeast at 15 to 25, and a high of 24 degrees. For tonight, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, winds east at 15 to 30, and a low of 14. For tomorrow, a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms, winds southeast at 15 to 25, a high of 25 degrees. Wednesday, partly to mainly sunny, winds southeast at 15 to 25, a high of 32. Thursday, mainly sunny, a high of 35. Friday, mainly sunny, a high of 32. In the Paw and Roblin, it's 17 degrees, Swan River 16, Dauphin, Brandon, Show Lake, Russell 18, Regina and Indian Head 19, Saskatoon and Hudson Bay 15, Broadview, Mooseman 21, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington 16. The Yorkton-Melville region has some haze, an east wind at 21 kilometers an hour. 71% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 20 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.